Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
I know that as soon as I saw that our first opponent's name up there, it was going to bring back a lot of thoughts about what happened in 2012. But in all honesty, this year has nothing at all to do with 2012. And I don't know much about Stony Brook's team this year. I know they won the conference tournament, and so they got the automatic bid.
Good morning and welcome to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast today on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber on 133 and 1133 in HD. Woo! Holiday weekend is in the books. We had the special Memorial Day show yesterday where I'm pretty for certain we couldn't have fit in any more guests. We thought we could. We just couldn't. Jam-packed edition yesterday. Get back into the routine today on this Tuesday edition. We got David Berry coming up, our good friend from the Lake Charles American Press. He's going to join us in the second hour. McNeese State. I talked about it on yesterday's show briefly. We're going to elaborate more about it. They looked like they were dead in the water. Didn't have a chance. Limped into the conference tournament as the 5 seed there in Sugar Land, Texas. And the Cowboys just turned around and won the whole damn thing. McNeese State punched their ticket to the NCAA regionals over the weekend. I talked about it yesterday. Maybe they would be coming to Baton Rouge or possibly College Station. They end up having to go to Nashville. And the regional of death that many people were calling it. Because you got Vanderbilt, the number one overall seed. You got Big Ten champ Ohio State. Yet another conference champ. And then you got McNeese State in there as well. But the Cowboys move on through. And we'll talk about that with our good friend David Berry from the Lake Charles American Press in the second hour. Third hour, he always joins us on Monday because the holiday. Hey, he took the day off. We're going to bring him back on tonight. This morning, he'll be on both. Jeff Palermo will be joining us to start off the third hour. He's part of course, the LSU Radio Network and is co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. He'll talk about the Baton Rouge Regional and his thoughts on the performance of Paul Menary's ball club over the weekend as well at the SEC tournament. And then we'll also have our good friend from the Saints Happy Hour podcast, the one and only Andrew Juge, will join us in the third hour. We briefly touched on it yesterday. It was announced on Sunday, remember, that Baton Rouge was awarded a host regional, that LSU would be hosting a regional. It just was not known if they would be the one seed. Remember, sometimes that gets confusing. LSU in the past has been a two seed in a regional that they've hosted. So it does happen from time to time. Traditionally, though, modern times, it does not occur that way. So we already knew on yesterday's show in the morning that LSU was going to host. We just didn't know who was going to be part of the field. Now we do. Arizona State, a surprising team in the regional. I thought they would at least have one LSU or Louisiana team in there, either Southern or McNeese. As I already stated, McNeese is headed to Nashville. Southern is headed to Starkville. And congrats to the Southern Jaguars, who won the SWAC Conference Championship and the SWAC Conference Tournament. they're heading off to Starkville, Mississippi. Mississippi State is hosting that regional in lovely Stark Vegas. And we had head coach Kerrick Jackson on the program yesterday, and he talked about how he didn't want to be in the Baton Rouge regional. You know, he wanted his team to experience going on the road and traveling and playing in a regional that wasn't literally 15 minutes away from their own campus. And they got their wish, and good for that. So Southern would be playing up in the Starkville regional. So LSU's the one seed for the Baton Rouge regional. Arizona State, the Sun Devils, are the two seed. Southern Miss, they should bring some fans to Baton Rouge from Hattiesburg. They're the three seed, and the four seed is dun 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 Stony Brook. And I'm going to piggyback off of what Paul Menary said to lead off today's show. This isn't that Stony Brook team. I mean, do you realize that the Stony Brook team that stunned LSU in the Super Regionals to punch their ticket to the College World Series, that was 2012? None of the kids on these rosters were even in high school. I mean, think about it that way. None of the kids that are on LSU's roster or Stony Brook's roster were even on their high school teams when Stony Brook stunned LSU in the Super Regional. Stony Brook is the four seed in a regional. This isn't a Super Regional match, okay, series. This is the regionals, and Stony Brook's the four seed. So, I understand that that's going to be very much the narrative this week. I get it. As we head into the Baton Rouge Regional with LSU. By the way, you can listen to LSU take on Stony Brook live right here on 103.7 The Game on Friday night. Tentatively scheduled for 6 o'clock, 5:30 first pitch. But if the first game between Southern Miss and Arizona State goes long, obviously that'll be pushed back. But you can listen to that live right here on 103.7 The Game. You can listen to all the LSU games from the Baton Rouge Regional live right here on 103.7 The Game this weekend. And that will be the narrative because that's the easy story to write this week. Stony Brook, LSU. Remember when Stony Brook upset LSU? Look, as Paul said right there, he doesn't even know anything about this Stony Brook team. This is not the same Stony Brook team that came in here and beat LSU in 2012. Now, I know certain Tiger fans out there listening right now are going to say, well, Ray, RP, hasn't this LSU team fallen to inferior competition this year? Over and over and over again in those midweek games? Yes. But my response to you, my rebuttal, would be, did you see how this team played in the last week of the season? Did you see how this team played in Hoover? Does this look like a team that's going to trip up and lose to Stony Brook, a four seed in its own regional on Friday night? No. They ran out of juice. They ran out of gas versus Vanderbilt. Made it to the semis. I mean, this is a team that beat South Carolina in the single elimination when their backs were against the wall. Lost an epic 17-inning affair, the longest game in SEC tournament history, the longest game by innings and by time in LSU baseball history. Still dusted itself off working on only 4 hours of sleep to beat Auburn in dramatic fashion while pitch throwing error, and then turned back around and had one more chance at the Fighting Cowbells. And took him to the tool shed. Like, took him behind the shed and just whooped that behind. The top five team in the country. And they just ran out of gas. Ran out of arms, ran out of gas against Vandy. They'll be nice and rested. They'll have a full week. Also, we'll talk more about it in the next segment. The LSU bullpen, woo, they stepped up. Definitely stepped up when the team needed them this past week. But LSU, once again, we've said it on this show. Cody and I discussed it for at least a couple weeks. even after the losing streak occurred, we said, what did this team need to do? Needed to get to the SEC tournament, win two games. Get to that magical 18-win plateau. They surpassed the 18-win plateau. They got three wins at the tournament. They got to 20 wins in conference play. Knocked off a top five team. Got to the conference semifinals. Not only did they lock up a regional site, they are not the 16 or, you know, they're not even one of the lower seed ones. They did well enough where they were able to, they started the SEC tournament by most projections by D1 Baseball and Baseball America, not even hosting a regional. That's where they were at. They weren't even hosting the regional. And yet, not only do they change that, they end up going all the way up to the 13 seed. They went from, at the start of SEC tournament play, being on the outside looking in, not hosting a regional. Then to end the SEC tournament, which they did not win, they didn't even play for the championship game. And they end up jumping all the way up to the 13 spot. And if you're LSU, and you're one of the LSU fans, yes, you take on the 31-win Stony Brook team Friday night. Then you'll play the winner. If you do win, you'll play the winner of Southern Miss Arizona State on Saturday night. And then it'll roll into Sunday. But you get a favorable matchup if you do win this. You know why? Because the committee paired you up. If you win your regional, you'll have to be on the road because you'll play the four seed if they win their regional, sure. But it's Georgia. That's a team that you already faced this year. You lost two games to them, sure. But you already played them. You already have some familiarity with them. That's not a bad thing. Now look, LSU has to take care of business, first and foremost. Stony Brook is up first. And then they'll play the winner of the Southern Miss Arizona State. And like those are two teams that have the same amount of wins or more than LSU does. Southern Miss is 38-19 on the year. Arizona State is 37-17. So if LSU wins Friday night, they'll play the winner of the Southern Miss-Arizona State game. And then y'all have to have the championship round on Sunday. And then possibly on Monday if a game is necessary. Georgia, meanwhile, is hosting the Athens Regional. They're going to play the likes of Mercer, Florida State, and Florida Atlantic. Florida State had been projected to be coming to Baton Rouge. I would have been interesting to see that. Also would have been interesting to see if Miami would have been able to come to Baton Rouge. Some of the projections had that occurring. Neither ended up happening. But look, Southern Miss is a regional team. They'll bring some fans. I don't know how many fans are going to come from, I want to say Arizona State is in Tempe.
The
Fighting Herm Edwards. I don't know how many of them are going to be coming to Baton Rouge, but I know LSU fans will come out and fill up those seats there at Alex Box Stadium this weekend. So LSU goes from being a team on the outside looking in to hosting a regional and being the 13 seed. We'll dive more into that in their performance and how the bullpen has looked and how the lineup has looked heading into this regional when we come back here, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. We let off today's show talking, of course, about LSU baseball. Yesterday morning, we knew that they were going to be a host. We just didn't know what the field was going to look like overall and what teams were going to be in the Baton Rouge Regional. Now we know. It was released yesterday around midday. LSU is the one seed in the Baton Rouge Regional. Arizona State, the Sun Devils, or the Fighting Herm Edwards, are the two seed. The three seed is the Southern Miss. I want to say they're still the Golden Eagles.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but, you know, people change their nicknames, so I can never.
It's like Minnesota all of a sudden just wants to be the Gophers. And it's like,
you are the Golden Gophers. Thank you. You and I are on the
same
page.
Don't do that,
There'll be none of that nonsense. And then the four seed is Stony Brook. So, Cody Schuetz, let's start there. You're a diehard LSU fan. You were worried about this team, but then you knew if they only needed to win two games, it was, in your opinion, two games, or I do believe you even said they needed to make a run to possibly the semifinals for you to feel better about this team.
That is what I said, yeah.
Yes. That's what they did.
It worked.
They won three games. They reached the semifinals.
And they got to that number 13 overall seed we were talking about.
And avoided the dreaded 15-16 having to play the number one or the number two best team in the country.
Right.
And if you do win your own regional, if you're LSU, you get to face a familiar foe in Georgia if they win theirs, obviously, in the Athens regional. So your thoughts on how things turned out for your Tigers?
I would have, if I'm going to look at it specifically for LSU's sake, I probably would have preferred to see one of either Southern or McNeese in this regional, just because I feel more confident in LSU being able to, you know, beat either Southern or McNeese more so maybe than Stony Brook. And I don't know anything about Stony Brook this year. I'm not going to say I do. But I would have liked to have seen maybe that one, quote-unquote, if you will, gimme game, so to speak. Now I don't know if that Friday game is necessarily as simple as go out there, put the uniform on, and win the game. I don't think it's that simple now. Arizona State, I'm going to have to look more at their schedule because it is a Power 5 school. It's a big school that has some name recognition behind it, but how is their baseball program? But anytime a school comes in that has a little name power behind it, you have to turn your head and look. And then it's pretty well known around these parts that Southern Miss plays really good baseball. Maybe this isn't one of their best seasons in the last handful of them, but regardless, they're well coached and they've got a good ball club. So LSU needs to, in the simplest terms, continue playing like they did in the SEC tournament. I think if they continue in that trajectory, they'll be fine. And I know that it ended in a loss there and a bad loss to Vandy, but, I mean, when you've got nobody left to pitch, when Will Rapoll is out there trying to eat up middle innings for you, there's only so much you can ask. So,
yeah, a little bit.
It makes me nervous because these teams coming in have a little clout behind them, if you will, and the one team that you would think maybe wouldn't have any little mojo with them, that being Stony Brook, does because of the history that team has at Alec Box. So, it's going to be an interesting regional. LSU undoubtedly is the most talented team in this field, undoubtedly. But will they be able to put it all together and win? I think so, but that's why they play the game.
You know, for me, and by the way, while we have a second here, bravo to whoever's running the Stony Brook baseball social media account.
They did a good one? They got a good one?
They got your boy Ryan Reynolds.
Detective Pikachu.
Detective Pikachu star, obviously. And it's a GIF that says, oh, hey, and it's him turning around and smiling. And it's just, that's all it sent at LSU baseball.
Yeah.
From Stony Brook. Like, oh, hey, didn't see you there.
And then when LSU properly defeats Stony Brook by multiple runs, the response tweet will then be from the room, oh, hi, Mark. You're going to say, oh, hey. Oh, hi, Mark. Damn it.
But, I mean, I love it from the little small school. It's just like.
Oh, you got to. TCU trolled Texas and Texas A&M and all those bigger schools down there in the Lone Star State. They trolled them the entire time they were in the Mountain West and Conference USA, and it got them in the Big 12.
I mean, it was almost, as soon as the selection show,
right,
as soon as it was done, literally, like, within, like, 3 to 4 minutes, Stony Brook had already had this bad boy out and was like, oh, hey. Like, so, I mean, once again, that'll be the narrative I don't.
I hope that dude was still on the team somehow or something in 2012, because as we said, these kids were still like eating snack packs and like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for lunch when that series happened.
Those cats, even on Stony Brook's team, didn't even know about Stony Brook. Okay, I'm just being honest.
That's probably a fact.
I'm just being honest. But that'll be the narrative, right? Yeah. Let me ask you this, diehard Tiger fan. If the name besides the number four seed in the Baton Rouge Regional was anyone but Stony Brook, you'd be far more confident, right?
Well, that's what I said. If it was either McNeese or Southern and not confident. Stony Brook, I'd feel better, yeah. That's how I started it off, because that's what I assumed was going to happen. That's what I thought was going to happen. And, you know,
I was surprised that the two other Louisiana teams did not get sent, at least one of them. I thought one of them. I didn't think it was going to be Southern, but all the projections either had Southern or McNeese, right? That's how it boiled down to. Even up to late Sunday night was, hey, this is going to be Southern, it's going to be McNeese, and they're going to be the four seed at the Baton Rouge Regional. I'm glad they didn't do that for Southern.
Good for them that they didn't. They don't have to, but
I mean,
worse for LSU, I think.
Yes. Glad for Southern that they get to experience a regional on the road outside of their city. Bravo. I feel bad for Southern that because they have to go to Stark Vegas. And I'm just saying.
That ballpark's cool, but when your baseball stadium's the biggest building in the town. It's not a joke. What are you laughing at? Literally, I'm not. I mean, if we include the whole condos and everything as part of the park, which it is,
that's correct.
It is by far the biggest building in Starkville.
You're not wrong.
No, I'm not.
You're not wrong.
And there's an entire like college campus. It doesn't have a bigger building than the baseball stadium. Alec Box is the greatest. There's a bigger building on campus at LSU than Alec Box.
Yes, multiple buildings that are bigger than Alec Box Stadium. And McNeese, they get to go to Nashville, which, good luck. Congratulations on winning your conference tournament. Oh, by the way, you get to go play Vandy.
In their ugly inverted pinstripe jerseys.
Throw shade at Vanderbilt. Throw shade at the Commodores.
The commode doors, get it right.
Oh, there it is. My man is on point this morning. So, yes, LSU baseball. More baseball at the Box will be this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Once again, you can listen to all the LSU games live right here on 103.7 The Game. When we come back, we'll stick with the LSU. It's going to be men's basketball news. Great news coming out late last night. We'll dive into it right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber on 133 and 1133 in HD. The LSU men's basketball team, their leader, the man in black himself, is back. And so are a few more of his star players. Will Wade and the LSU men's basketball team received a dose of good news last night. About a week and a half ago, Javonte Smart already announced his intentions of returning, pulling himself away from the NBA draft and coming back to LSU. Then late last night, junior guards Skylar Mays and Marlon Taylor both withdrew their names from NBA draft consideration, and will be returning to school for the 2019-20 season. Mays and Taylor will both be seniors in 2019. Remember, Mays had a breakout year. He's the local kid, the Baton Rouge product. He was second-team All-SEC this past season, while he provided the veteran presence for a team that ended up winning 28 games, won the SEC regular season title, and advanced to the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament. He also accomplished this while being a first-team academic All-American with a 4.01 GPA in pre-med. Yeah, so he really doesn't need basketball. He's good. Skylar's good. He had a career year, Mays did, averaging 13 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and almost 2 steals per game. Taylor, meanwhile, who has not seen an alley-oop pass that he doesn't think he can do a somersault and dunk. Started in 24 games for the Tigers last year. He averaged almost 7 points, 3 rebounds, and, of course, was known for his acrobatic dunks. He had 2 of his dunks during the year that made SportsCenter's top 10. So, Taylor and Mays come back. Javonte Smart comes back. So, you'll have Skyler or Javonte run point. I think it's going to be Javonte replacing Tremont Waters because that's what happened during the season when Tremont got banged up. So you'll have Javonte at the 1. You'll have Skyler Mays at the 2. Marlon Taylor will come in when they want to go 3 guard set. Yes, you lose Naz Reid, but you get the big fella, Alabama's best basketball prospect, top 25 prospect in the nation. You can simply insert him into the lineup. And now you just got to wait to see if freshman Emmett Williams decides to return. He has until this Wednesday to decide one way or another if he's going to remain in the conversation in the NBA draft pool or come back for another year. If he comes back, this team is stacked. And we talked about it last week on Friday's show with Tyler Nunez when he said that, you know, this team is loaded. They got 2 guys that were redshirted last year that could be starters this year for them. And they got a JUCO guy coming in and another freshman, and you got the best basketball player out of the state of Alabama coming in and all these other guys coming back. Could this team be just as good or even better with the SEC regular season championship and a run to the Sweet 16 under their belts? You know Skyler Mays is going to give you leadership. You know Javonte Smart kept developing as long as the season progressed last year as a freshman. He's got to work on the turnovers, but that was the same bugaboo that Tremont Waters had. Marlon Taylor's going to give you high-flying dunks, a lot of minutes. Do they have a guy on the roster? Can Emmett Williams be that guy on the roster that can do the dirty work that Cavell Bigby Williams did so willingly? Cavell was a leader. He was a glue guy, and he did a lot of the dirty work that Naz Reid couldn't do or didn't want to do, however you want to look at that. I don't know, but I love the leadership and the play that Skyler Mays will bring to the table. Him and Javonte being out there as your guards is a great thing. You get the stud from Alabama. He'll start automatically, and then you have the couple players that were redshirted last year that didn't get a chance to play. They'll be hungry. There's a very good possibility that this team could be better. And they still have some spots to make some other moves. What are they going to do? So we'll see if Emmett Williams makes his decision. But good news last night, Skyler Mays and both Marlon Taylor deciding to return back to LSU men's basketball program. Cody, how do you feel? We talked about this. We've talked about this with a lot of our guests, Ron Higgins, our good friend. We also talked with Tyler Nunez. We know that we felt that these guys were going to be coming back, that they were just out there doing their due diligence and exploring, talking to NBA teams, figuring out what their game needs, what they need to develop, what they're good at. And, you know, just wanting to go through the experience as teammates. We knew that they were coming back, but how good was it when you saw the news last night that both Skyler Mays and Marlon Taylor were joining Javonte Smart in coming back to the LSU men's basketball program?
I think these were the last 2 guys that I badly wanted to come back. I know there's still, you know, Emmett is still out there, and he's, you know, not officially gone one way or the other, I suppose, but... And I expect him to come back. I do. But these 2, Skyler Mays and Marlon Taylor, are the 2 guys that hadn't decided they were going to come back yet. You know, we lost Tremont Waters. He's not coming back. You lost Naz Reid. He's not coming back. But with Javonte Smart coming back, and now these 2 guys coming back, you've got the big kid in. I mean, A lot of pressure, I think, is going to fall on Javonte Smart and on the new guy from Alabama, because Javonte Smart is going to have to replace Tremont Waters, and that's not going to be easy.
He did do a good job last year, last season briefly. Remember when Tremont got benched because he struggled?
Right, it was like early part of the season.
Javonte took on that role, and then Javonte had to play for Tremont later in the season when Tremont had the stomach bug.
Right.
Or some people speculate he
missed the Kentucky game or something.
Yeah, he missed like three games there towards the end of the season, and Javonte filled in for him. So we've talked about it. Javonte's got to learn to kind of calm down sometimes. He gets a little too excited, but I think Skyler there helps him, right? And when you saw the two on the court together, Javonte made less mistakes than he did when he was coming in as part of the second team. When he was on the floor with Skyler, Skyler was always able to kind of calm him down, make him feel a little bit more comfortable. We talked about it on the program. But, I mean,
this kind of, to me, this solidifies that at least for the next handful of years, LSU basketball should continue to be quite competitive.
Oh, exactly.
And that's kind of what you want. You know, you don't expect the team to be a blue blood overnight. Not everybody's Memphis. But, you know, I think LSU is going to, with these two guys coming back now, they will continue to compete in the SEC, make NCAA tournaments, and then, you know, who knows from there.
Do you need Emmett Williams?
Do you need him?
As a fan. Or the three guys that you really wanted to come back?
I'll take him, but like I said, these were the last two guys that I really, really wanted, or so to speak, needed to come back. Emmett Williams is a great addition because he knows that's one more guy on the team that knows the program and knows how things
Correct.
Work for LSU. So you don't have to bring in an entirely new guy and he has to learn the ropes. Like, no, Emmett knows what's going on. It would be a much more seamless deal if he just came back than adding another player. But if he does decide for whatever reason to go pro or not come back to LSU, then, I mean,
yeah,
good luck. That's all, you know.
And depth will not be an issue at the guard spot either. And that's the other thing that I like about this. You'll have Skyler and Javonte will be your starters. And Marlon will be the versatile guy. He can be your three guard. You know, he can be, if you want to run three guards out there, which sometimes Wade does, he can do that or be your bench guy. But the two guys that they signed during the early signing period, that's the other thing that people forget. Okay? James Bishop, the kid out of Baltimore, is a 6'2", 170-pound combo guard. He's a four-star prospect by ESPN. Okay? He may not even get to see the court. Right? And so he gives you some depth. And then there's Charles Manning. He's out of New York. He's coming from the JUCO, Florida Southwestern State College, which I didn't even know was a thing. Mm-hmm. It sounds a little made up, doesn't it? A little bit.
Yeah,
Florida Southwestern State College.
Panhandle Junior College.
Fort Myers. Man in Fort Myers. He's 6'5", 180-pound guard. So you get a kid, a freshman and a JUCO that are going to come in and give you depth. That gives you five guards right there, right? Okay? You get the big fella, the post player coming in, Trendon Watford. We already talked about him. He's the Gatorade Player of the Year for the state of Alabama. He's a multiple state champion. He's a top 25 prospect. So you add him. He's going to be a plug-and-play guy. He's going to essentially replace Nas Reed. So you get backup guards. You get a Nas Reed replacement. You got a nucleus that helped lead you to the Sweet 16. And here's the other thing, Cody, that I like about this. These are the guys that stepped up when everything happened with all the distractions of the program. Javonte Smart handled everything that was surrounding the program and him and took it like a champ and handled it like a seasoned pro. And Skylar Mays is an academic and a leader of this team. And these pieces of these guys, I understand you lose Tremont Waters and you lose a guy that's an all-SEC selection and Nas Reed was all-SEC freshman team. That hurts. But this is college basketball. And you got this experience of these guys that dealt with that distraction, dealt with the national media scrutiny, dealt with all that, and still somehow made a way to get to the Sweet 16. I mean, with this nucleus coming back, and if you throw Emmett Williams in, I'll ask you, Cody, what is, if Emmett Williams decides to come back too, and you already got, like I said, the JUCO kid, the freshman out of Baltimore, the kid out of Alabama coming in, what are expectations? What are realistic expectations with Will Wade still being the coach and all these pieces coming back and you adding these players? What are the expectations for you?
I think think rock bottom expectations are to make the tournament.
That should be rock bottom?
I think that should be. I mean, I think you have to expect to make the tournament this season. I can't expect this team to make another Sweet 16 run just because Tremont Waters and Naj Reid were big parts of that team. And yes, there are other guys coming in that couldn't replace them. And maybe this team is just as good, but I won't expect, you know, oh, they need to get to the same, you know, at least the same spot as the team this year got in order, you know, for it to be considered. Like, no, I'm not going to go that far. They need to make the tournament. And we'll see, I guess, how these kids progress as the season goes on to see maybe if they have another little run in March in them. But I would say for sure, off the top of my head, right now, they need to make the NCAA tournament at least.
Expect big things from Andre Hyatt. He was the freshman out of the Bronx that didn't get on the court this year. So you're going to have, but my bigger thing is down low. The kid out of Alabama is going to take care of a lot of that. But LSU had the advantage of having both Naj Reid, a 6'10" guy, and Cavell Bigby Williams, 6'11". Where's the down low post guy? Do they still make a move, or do they just change the way their offense runs and go more up tempo and more guards, go with three guards? I don't know. But still, tremendous news for the LSU men's basketball team, finding out, as expected, but still, you never do know about these things, that two more guys are coming back to the program for next season. Just Emmett Williams is all left. That's all who's left. We'll probably hear about his decision either today or by the deadline tomorrow. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up the first hour right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. The NBA Finals have now been set. We briefly touched on it on yesterday's show. We'll dive more into it as the week progresses. Game one of the NBA Finals is going to be Thursday night at 8 o'clock. Warriors versus Raptors. Now, Kevin Durant has been ruled out for game one. There's been some chatter that he may not play at all, which is interesting. Now, the Warriors didn't need him to finish off eliminating the Houston Rockets, who have been dubbed as the biggest threat to the Dubs. They didn't need him to finish them off because Steph Curry returned back to the form of winning regular season MVPs and NBA championships. Steph or Stephen Curry, however you'd like to say his name. They play with the chip on their shoulder. They've been playing aggressive, and they were down by double digits, twice by 17 points and once by 18 points in three consecutive games against the Portland Trail Blazers, and still rallied to win those games and sweep Portland out of the playoffs. We don't know if Boogie Cousins is going to be making an appearance for this finals. We expect Iguodala to be back for Golden State, but they still have the Splash Brothers. They still have Steph Curry. They still have Klay Thompson. They got Draymond Green, who loves doing the dirty work, gets in the other opponent's head, kind of an old-school basketball player in a lot of ways. That guy could have fit right in with the Detroit Pistons with the bad boy era. But to think that this Raptors team is just going to roll over for the Warriors, I don't see it. I know it's going to be hard for people to get behind this NBA Finals because it's the Warriors once again for the fifth straight year. And besides Drake, who's excited about the Toronto Raptors? Hell, half of Canada is probably not excited about the Toronto Raptors. But the Raptors are in their first finals. And Kawhi Leonard led them there. Kyle Lowry had himself a good series. They have some depth there. They were down two games to none to the Milwaukee Bucks. looked like they were going to get swept, and then they turned around and won four straight games to get to their first finals appearance. Kawhi Leonard proving why he's a top five player in the game, probably top three, one of the best two-way players in the game. Remember, this is a guy who has already won an NBA Finals MVP in San Antonio. It wasn't Tony Parker or Tim Duncan or anything like that. It was Kawhi Leonard. And I'll say this again. He forced himself out. They had a falling out with the Spurs. They trade him to the Raptors. The Spurs, early round exits in the playoffs. Kawhi Leonard leads the Toronto Raptors to their first NBA Finals appearance. It's one of those things where maybe we undervalued Kawhi Leonard because we wanted to give Popovich all the credit. We see how just kind of average the Spurs are without Kawhi Leonard, and we see how much better he makes Toronto. I'm going to watch. It's an interesting series for me because I love Kawhi Leonard. We'll see if he can continue on his mission in the postseason, see if he can make this a series. That's all I really want. I think Golden State's going to win. I just want to see Toronto make it a series. Maybe one big game. At least, at least test Golden State. Make them work for it. Will Kevin Durant return for the finals? Don't know. But look, Toronto does have veteran guys. Kyle Lowry, Serge Ibaka, Mark Gasol, Fred VanVleet. But they're going to have to play a huge role. And the other thing, if Toronto wants to have a chance in this, Danny Green is going to have to find his shot because he has been awful. Toronto beat Milwaukee despite Green shooting 19% while starting all six games. So we'll see. We'll see if Kevin Durant plays. We'll see if Steph Curry just takes over with the three-point ball. We'll see if Klay Thompson, who got denied all NBA honors, plays with a huge chip on his shoulder and just goes out there and drops 50 to remind everyone, like, yeah, I'm one of the best top 15 players in the league. NBA Finals this Thursday. First hour's in the books. Time for the second hour after this break, right here on 103.7 The Game.
It may not be stomach issues.
For me.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they're looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Well, obviously we'll sit down as a staff and discuss it further, and we'll make a decision pretty quickly about that because it'll affect what the pitchers do as they prepare for the weekend, but I probably won't have an announcement for you all until Thursday.
Good morning and welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're Sawmall Cast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber on 133 and 1133 in HD. We let off today's show talking about the Baton Rouge Regional. That's right, LSU went from not hosting a regional to hosting a regional and then avoiding the dreaded 16-15 national seed hosting duties. Ends up getting the number 13 national seed. They'll begin play this Friday in their first game as the one seed. LSU will take on Stony Brook. We talked about that in the first hour. And look, this is not the same Stony Brook team. Me and Cody chopped it up for you. The kids that are on this roster right now for both LSU and for Stony Brook weren't even in high school when the two teams played in the Super Regionals when Stony Brook stunned LSU on the way to the College World Series. Okay? Not the same players, not even the same coaching staffs. Okay? This is a totally different beast, totally different animal. So LSU will begin play against the 4-seed Stony Brook on Friday. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. But what intrigues me is the other two teams in this regional, more so than Stony Brook. Cody mentioned it in the first hour. Arizona State. Now, Arizona State's making an NCAA regional appearance for the first time since 2016. What do we know about the Sun Devils or the Fighting Herm Edwards? Well, they're the 2-seed in the Baton Rouge regional to take on the 3-seed Southern Miss. This is a team that won 37 games this year. They opened up the year sweeping Notre Dame. They swept Michigan State. They beat Cal State Fullerton, who's typically a good team. And they started off strong, man. If you look at their schedule, they did not lose a game to start the year. Whooping up on Washington State as well. Or the first loss of their year was a 12-inning, 5-4 loss at the end of March at Oregon. They started off red hot, beat their rival Arizona three times, and then things kind of got derailed for them. They lose to Long Beach State. They drop 2 of 3 at USC. They lose to UNLV. They drop 2 of 3 at Oregon State, who was a top-5 team of the team. And ever since then, they've been up and down. They lost 2 of 3 to UCLA. They lost 2 of 3 at Nebraska. They went 1-1 against Cal, a team that LSU had already defeated, remember, earlier in the season in non-conference play. And then they lost 2 of 3 against Stanford. So not the best, terrific start to the season. But the end lacks. I mean, they lost their last 4 series of the year. So they kind of stumbled in to an NCAA regional. But once again, they play in the Pac-12, which is traditionally a good conference. So what do we make of that? What do we make of Arizona State's start and finish? You know, did they just beat up on inferior competition? Have they had injuries? You look at their lineup, they're batting over 300 as a team. They got a cat called Spencer Torkelson, who's batting 348, 21 home runs, 60 RBIs. They got another guy, Hunter Bishop, who's batting 347 with 22 home runs and 61 RBIs. And they have another guy named Trevor Hovere with 13 home runs and 48 RBIs. So they got three guys batting 330 or better that have double-digit home run totals. Cody Schutz, does that catch your attention, knowing that if you possibly have to face Arizona State, which is not a gimme, right? There's no gimme that you'll face Arizona State. But let's say they beat Southern Miss in that 2-3 matchup. They got three guys that can rake, as they like to say.
I saw someone tweet out, I forget exactly who it was, but there are, I believe, three guys in this regional that have 20-plus home runs on the season. None of them play for LSU. So it's one of those, it's Alec Box Stadium. It's an average-sized ballpark in South Louisiana in the middle of the summer. Ball will carry.
Yes.
It's something to keep an eye on. Is it something to worry about? If you get beat by a team going, you know, yard on you over and over and over and over, and then, you know, you lost.
Yeah.
So it's something to keep an eye on, but I could see maybe a big home run from one of these guys costing LSU a game somewhere.
In the 8th inning.
Right.
From a pitch that hung too much by Zach Hess.
97 mile an hour fastball. But so I am worried about these long balls, but LSU is the better team.
Correct.
So despite the other guys having maybe more power or more thumpers in the lineup, I think LSU can still stave off, you know, losing just because of the long ball.
Yeah, they got the two guys of 20-plus home runs and 60 or more RBIs. Those are the two best hitters on their ball club as well for average.
And I think maybe either Stony Brook or Southern Miss has a 20-home run guy as well. I'm not sure which one it is, but I think I read there are three 20-plus homer guys in this regional. None of them wear purple and gold.
The ace of their staff is Alec Marsh. He's 9-3 overall. His ERA is 3.17. He's pitched 96 innings, so he's there. He's their hoss. He's their big guy. Now, more than likely, he'll be pitched against Southern Miss. So once again, you know, you never do know how a regional is going to play out. But they have a couple other guys, an RJ Dabovich, who's 6-1 with an ERA about 4.5. Their team ERA is 4.5, so nothing overpowering by any stretch of the imagination. The best guy is the Alex Marsh kid, who's 9-3. He's got 92 strikeouts. They have another pitcher who's only 4-4 on the year, ERA north of 5. Whoa. But he's logged 87 innings. He's got 80 strikeouts. So their ace of their staff is a strikeout guy. He's going to be an aggressive pitcher, 92 Ks. He's going to get after it. But will LSU face him? You never do know. But Alex Marsh is a guy to maybe keep an eye on. The other guy is Boyd Vanderkoo. He's their other leading pitcher. He's a strikeout guy as well. So, I don't know. Arizona State, that's going to be I'm intrigued. I mean, you'd like to have McNeese or Southern in the field because there'd be more familiarity with them, obviously. But I like having a team that I don't know anything about, Cody, right? I kind of like that. It makes the regional a little bit more entertaining. You're like, hey, well, what's this team really about? Okay, well, I really don't know them. They play over in the Pac-12. You know, Southern Miss, meanwhile, they're the 3 seed. They're your Conference USA champions. They took care of business, defeating the likes of Rice and then defeating Florida Atlantic, the Owls, or the Fighting Lane Kiffins, however you want to describe them.
So they beat the Owls and the Owls?
Yeah, all good. Yes, I did. Bravo, sir. So why does Southern Miss hate Owls?
That's where we need to dig into. Bury the lead on that one.
Why are you hating Owls so much, Southern Miss?
And I guess since you mentioned that, just to throw it out there, oh, the fall of Rice. Rice baseball.
Oh, what happened? What happened, Dave?
What happened?
That's a good question. All right, you're talking about Southern Miss. Once again, they're the 3 seed. They'll be playing Arizona State in the first game on Friday. That'll be the game prior to LSU Stony Brook. There's your other 20 home run guy.
Southern Miss.
Matt Wallner. He's batting .324, which is second best on the Golden Eagles roster. He has 12 doubles, 21 homers, 55 RBIs, slugging percentage of .676. That's a team high. So that's your big bat that they'll have to avoid if they play Southern Miss over the weekend. Their team average, they're batting only .287 as a team. And if you take Wallner out of the mix, they only have two other guys with double-digit home runs, and that's barely. Bryant Bowen and Hunter Slater both have 11 home runs each and around 50 RBIs. So they got some bats. Bowen leads the Southern Miss team in batting average with .340. So they got some couple of good hitters, not as formidable as it seems as Arizona State does. But once again, they got another big bat in that lineup. And like you said, Cody, the ball's going to carry there at Alex Box Stadium.
I mean, it during the day especially, I know LSU plays their first game at night. The ball, I think, will carry a little better during the day until that night air moves in. It gets a little cooler, maybe. I don't know. All I know is Alex Box is not the stadium in Hoover, or it is not TD Ameritrade Park. It is a hitter friendly park. I'll go that far. The corners are short, and so I think home runs could be something to keep an eye on this weekend. But if home runs cost LSU the weekend, then there's probably something else we can look at other than just giving up the long ball.
Southern Miss's team ERA is 4.10, which is okay. Their ace of their staff is Walker Powell, ERA of 2.78, 6-2 on the year, three complete games, 94 innings. He's a workhorse, 71 Ks. So they got one really good ace and one big bopper. So Southern Miss, maybe not as dynamic as Arizona State, but either one of those teams, if they get hot, you know how this works. Baseball is a funny thing. Baseball is a funny thing. So Baton Rouge Regional starts this Friday, Southern Miss versus Arizona State. One of those teams will move on to play, hopefully, LSU. Well, one of them will play LSU regardless if LSU wins or loses on Friday. So we'll have to see. We'll keep the discussion going here on RP3 and Company after this break, right here on 103.7 The Game.
First pitch swinging, drives it to left field, Schwarber across, and it's over his head and off the out-of-town scoreboard. Scoring is Brantley. Gurriel into third base on the double by Chirinos. The Astros take the lead 3-2.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out, if you like, on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Take it back, Houston Astros. Boy, they had to hold on for that victory yesterday, man. Woo! Cubbies are coming to town for a three-game set. And the Astros hold on to win 6-5 to improve to 36 wins and 19 losses on the year. But they had to hold on because the Cubs tried to mount a furious comeback of the Fighting Cody Schutzes. They plated one run in the top of the seventh and then two more on home runs, two home runs in three batters in the top of the ninth to make it a 6-5 game. But the Stros hold on to take game one of that series versus the Chicago Cubs. The Astros got to Cole Hamels, who did not have himself a good game for the Cubs. He only lasted four innings, gave up six earned runs on seven hits while walking four and striking out none. That's not what you gave him the money for. The rest of the Cubs bullpen did a little bit better. Kyle Ryan, Dylan Maples, and Brandon Kinsler stopped bleeding, only gave up three hits over the next four innings of work. But Hamels' damage was done, and the Stros were able to take advantage of that. And remind, you know, look, Houston is still without Altuve. And yesterday, they don't have Altuve, and they don't have Springer. Okay? Carrera didn't even play yesterday. They're a little wounded. They're a little banged up. Josh Reddick goes 0-5. But Bregman stepped up big, 2-for-5 like he's been doing. Michael Brantley came up with a big hit. Yuli Gurriel, three hits. Jack Mayfield with a hit. Derek Fisher with two hits. They found a way to win despite having a good portion of their best hitters on the bench nursing injuries. They still found a way to get the job done. Gerrit Cole pitched well, six innings. Only gave up two runs on three hits while striking out 12. He made the Cubs batters look silly. Usana Roberto, he came in the ninth, and it was ugly. Three hits on the two. He gave up the two runs, both of those solo jacks. He did strike out two. Now, to be fair, the Cubs didn't have Chris Bryant. He was out for the game as well. So some of the bigger stars that you would anticipate for this series weren't on the field yesterday. But Garrett Cole, man, 12 Ks. 12. You know, and look, Anthony Rizzo homered in the first. He flexed his muscles, the Chicago Cubs star. He drilled a slider from Cole into the right field stands there at Minute Maid Park. But that didn't matter because Cole stopped giving up runs and struck out 12. In the next 5 2/3 innings after that initial inning, he only allowed 2 hits on no walks, faced 19 batters, struck out 11 of them. If this guy can be the number two for the Astros, which he is right now, if he continues being the number two ace behind Verlander, oh, filthy. But then Roberto came into the game. And you just like, you remember Friday night? He came into the game with a 2-run lead for the Astros, allowed a home run. On Saturday, he allowed 2 runs in the ninth and did blow that save, although the Astros came back to 1. And then last night, he came in with a 3-run lead and immediately gave up a first-pitch home run to a guy on the Cubs that is known for being a defensive specialist, Albert Almora. And then he just threw that meatball 2 batters later to Addison Russell, who just teed off on that like it was batting practice. Concern there for the Stros. Your closer loves giving up home runs and taking large leads and making them small. Little bit concerning there about where he's at. And look, he'd been doing so well, right? From opening day until May 20th, he allowed only 1 run. But in the last 3 games, for whatever reason, he's allowed 5. But yet, despite not having his best stuff and not having control and putting himself in terrible situations for the Stros, Ozuna's still finding a way to get 2 saves and a win in those 3 games. So despite not having his best stuff, it's still good enough for the Astros to win. That's when you know that you're a really, really good team, is that when you have 3 of your best hitters not in the lineup and your closer is throwing meat pitches and giving up runs aplenty, and yet you still find a way to win games? Yeah. You're in great shape if you're the Houston Astros. They'll be back on tonight. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game will be at 6:30. Astro launch, 7 o'clock, 7:10, first pitch. The good brother Ben Love will guide you into that from 4 to 6. The host of Bumper to Bumper Sports will lead you in from 4 to about 6:35. Then Astro launch will take over. First pitch for Astros tonight will be at 7:10. Also, you can check out Tiger Rag Radio after Astros baseball tonight right here on 103.7 The Game. Cody, we all know you, my friend, are a diehard Chicago Cubs fan. You bleed for the Cubbies. You hate the Southsiders. You bleed for the Cubbies.
I had my Wrigley Field shirt on yesterday.
You had no Chris Bryant yesterday. You still almost beat the Astros. You feel good?
The Cubs are fine. The Cubs are fine. They're a weird regular season team. They don't seem to ever really get too far out ahead of the division. They're only a half game up right now on the Brewers. Screw the Cardinals. I'm not worried about the Cubs. I don't know. Not yet, at least. We're not even to the All-Star break. As long as everybody's nothing catastrophic injury-wise happens, I think this team will be there at the end.
As long as you guys can be healthy. Yeah, that's the main thing.
I think they'll be there at the end, I think.
I like that. That's sound reasoning from a diehard Cubs fan, which is not always the case. But since they won that World Series, they've kind of come back down to earth, so to speak. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, We're going to welcome on our friend from the Lake Charles American Press, David Berry. He covers McNeese State. They're into an NCAA regional. They're bound for Nashville. We'll talk to him about that right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. And you also can check us out on LUS Fiber on 133 and 1133 in HD. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to welcome on our first guest on today's show. He covers the McNeese State Cowboys for the Lake Charles American Press. McNeese State is bound for the Nashville Regional as they will take on Vanderbilt there, among other powerhouse teams. We're going to talk more about the Cowboys' magical run to the postseason with our next guest, the one and only David Berry. David, how are you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, man. Just getting all of a sudden getting ready to head up to Nashville for the second time in a few months. But I'm doing good. How you doing?
Well, hopefully this time, man, the road trip will be a lot better for you. And you won't have to have this guy tag along with you. It's that fellow that went with you the last time. He was a total pill, man. Total buzzkill.
That was the fun part. As you should remember, it was the drive. That was an absolute monster.
That's a monster. It's a monster drive, especially for you going all the way from Lake Chuck up to Nashville. Well, let's start there, because we had you on the program not that long ago, and it appeared that McNeese may not even qualify for its own conference tournament. They were struggling, and yet they somehow find a way to get in as a 5 seed, and then they win the whole damn thing for their first conference tournament championship since, 2003, and now they're in an NCAA regional. How the hell did that happen, man?
Well, when you hear people talk about conference tournaments being about who gets hot, this is McNeese to the T. They were probably the best team in the Southland Conference over the last, I'd say, months, maybe 5 weeks of the regular season. I mean, they won, I believe, their last four or five conference series and finished 9-3 in conference play to get in to the conference tournament. And once they got into the conference tournament, I mean, the pitching was phenomenal. First game, they get a complete game from Aiden Anderson, and he wound up being the conference tournament MVP. He came in the deciding game on Saturday against Central Arkansas in relief, pitched, I think, 3 2/3 innings and was really good. So it was a combination of great pitching, timely hitting, good fielding, and just breaks that went their way. I mean, that's all the stuff that you need to win a conference tournament. And the most impressive thing to me is they didn't drop a game. I mean, in a conference tournament where, like you said, they were the 5th seed, I mean, Sam Houston State, they were 2 and out. I mean, that's, you know, as a top seed, which just, it just almost never happens. And, you know, all these, they still had 3 other teams ahead of them as far as seeding goes, and they were flawless, you know, as far as going 4-0 in the tournament. So, yeah, like I said, when you talk about getting hot at the right time, I can say that is just this case with McNeese, where they, you know, caught fire, and, I mean, right, you know, they rode it all the way to a berth in the NCAA tournament.
We're talking with David Berry, the Lake Charles American Press, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. David, what was the turning point for this season? I know they put together a great run there in the Southland Conference Tournament in Sugar Land, but they needed to turn it around towards the end of the season as well. I mean, despite defeating LSU in a midweek game, they had a very up-and-down regular season. What was the turning point for this team?
I would say they had lost 2 out of 3 on the road at Northwestern State. And at that point, they had 7 conference wins. And I remember going into the weekly press conference with Cowboy head coach Justin Hill, And, you know, when we went in, he was frustrated, but it wasn't like a calm frustrated, if it makes sense. Like, he wasn't necessarily frustrated at the losses. He was just frustrated that, like, you know, they were getting so close to winning, and they have the, you know, they had the talent. They, as we're seeing, the talent was always there to be a team that was winning, but they were playing, they were losing so many close games, coming out on the wrong end of so many close games that, honestly, if you take about five or six of the games that they lost by one run and flip them into a win, they're probably competing for a regular season championship as well. But after the Northwestern State series, I remember Hill said, you know, I feel like if we can get 15 conference wins, then we should be able to get into the tournament. He said 15 is usually the number that gets teams in. Like I said, this was seven conference wins at the time. So that meant they needed to finish the season 8-4 in conference play. That would have meant taking at least two out of three in every series, or, you know, sweeping a couple series. You know, somehow you got to get to 8-4. Well, sure enough, after that, that's when everything started clicking, and they won. I mean, they finished 9-3, and sure enough, the 15th win on the Friday against Houston Baptist actually was the win that clinched the conference tournament for them. And the 16th win, along with other results, helped them get the fifth seed. So I would say right after that Northwestern State game, you know, like, the kid, like, when I interview players, they don't really have a specific thing that changed, but, like, you'd have to say, I mean, they went after that Northwestern State game, they went on the run, so it's like something happened, you know. So that, but I'd say that was the big turning point.
I'm talking with David Berry here from the Lake Charles American Press on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. David, okay, so they take care of business, they win the conference championship tournament. Now, I mean, Nice has a ton of great tradition. They turn out big leaguers from time to time. I was surprised that it had been so long since they won a conference championship, 2003. I know you're just now covering this team this season, but how big of a deal is it for the folks over there in Lake Charles that the Cowboys actually won the conference championship for the first time in such a long time?
It's been pretty big. You noticed during the conference tournament, you definitely noticed that the crowds from McNeese gradually got bigger. Now, obviously, there are a few reasons for it. Obviously, one, you know, you keep advancing and you realize, you know, you get a game closer to possibly winning a conference championship. And you're like, well, you know, let me go out there, especially if you're in Lake Charles or Beaumont or, you know, anywhere, you're within 2.5-3 hours of going to Sugar Land. So you're like, all right, you know, let me go out there. And, you know, when the fans came, you know, they showed out. You got the cowbells, which, you know, I'm sure the opposing fans probably don't like and, you know, don't want to deal with. But that was one. And then obviously just the fact that you were closer to the weekend, the more games you played. You know, they played the championship on Saturday. They played, you know, so you just had more of an opportunity to probably go out there. But, no, the community was excited. Yesterday they had a watch party at the walk-ons here, and, you know, the public was invited. It was a fair amount of people there. So, yeah, I mean, no, everybody's excited. And they mentioned how 2017 they won the regular season title and had a outside chance of getting an at-large berth and didn't get it. You know, they kind of felt like they got snubbed. So this is nice. For it to be the opposite, where they took, you know, they grabbed hold of it despite finishing fifth in the conference during the regular season. They took hold and they, you know, they got that conference tournament win. So they didn't have to sit there on, you know, yesterday and worry, like, hey, are we going to tournament? It was just where we're going and who we're playing. But yeah, the community is very excited.
David, I know projections over the weekend, whether it was from D1 Baseball or Baseball America, had McNeese not traveling to Nashville. A lot of the thought process was they would either be in Baton Rouge or possibly over in College Station. They'd say within the borders of Louisiana or Texas. That didn't happen. They ended up going to Nashville and kind of flipped because everyone had Southern either going here to the Baton Rouge Regional for LSU or going up to Nashville and playing in the Vanderbilt Regional. That didn't happen either. It ended up being McNeese. How surprising was it that McNeese had to be shipped to Nashville?
Well, I'll say this. I was surprised when LSU came up. So, like, we're watching the selection show yesterday, and, you know, you see a lot of regionals come up, and McNeese's name did come up. And, you know, a lot of them were not surprising because they were pretty far away. Then you see LSU come up, and you naturally think, like, all right, it'll be either McNeese or Southern going there, not both. Turns out it's neither, and I was surprised at that. Just a quick note, I'm actually very happy for Southern, and so is Coach Hill, that they actually get to travel because, you know, I mean, I would imagine you do something like win a conference tournament and get an NCAA berth. You know, you worked hard, and you probably don't want to just go 20 minutes south. So, you know, quick, just wanted to say that. But, yeah, I was surprised. I was kind of starting to keep up with the after McNeese won, or when they were on the road to winning, I was keeping up with where they could possibly go. I definitely thought A&M would have been one. Then I saw Ole Miss made a run through the conference tournament, almost won it. And then I figured, okay, it'll probably be either one of the Mississippi schools, either in Starkville or Oxford. And then I thought, yeah, Southern would go to somewhere like Vanderbilt, just because Southern's RPI is just so low. Like, it's in the 200s. It's one of the lower ones in the entire tournament. So, yeah, when I saw that McNeese was going to Vanderbilt, I was surprised just because, I mean, it's a really tough regional. It's a very hot regional. Every team in the Nashville regional won their conference tournament. So everybody's hot right now. Indiana State's good. Ohio State, they're good and they're hot right now as well. So, yeah, I was really surprised to see. I actually had my head down when Vanderbilt came up just because I didn't think that would be it. So, yeah, it was definitely a surprise.
We're on with David Berry, the late Charles American Press, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. David, one more question before we let you go. Look, a tremendous season. They turned things around after the Northwestern State Series, as you said. They take care of business to get into the conference tournament as a 5 seed. Then they don't drop a game, become conference tournament champions for the first time since 2003. They're in an NCAA regional. But what are your expectations of what this team can do this weekend in Nashville against the likes of mighty Vanderbilt and others? Do you think they can take a game, sneak a game here? What are you looking at?
Look, it's going to be tough. I think, you know, it'd be tough wherever they were going. But going into what people could argue is the best team in the country is not, you know, that's even harder. So Indiana State, like I said, they're really good. They just came off of winning a conference tournament championship themselves. So
is that who McNeese State plays on Friday? They play Indiana State?
They play Indiana State, and then Ohio State is the 4, and they play Vanderbilt. Honestly,
so the Big Ten champ is actually the 4 seed?
The Big Ten champion is the 4 seed, yeah. How crazy is that? Yeah.
All right, continue, sorry.
They would not have made it into the tournament if they didn't win the conference tournament. So, yeah, I'll say they may not actually, you know, as tough as this is, and, you know, I'm sure I'll hear from somebody about, you know, kind of being negative about McNeese, but there's a chance that the McNeese may never even see Vanderbilt in the tournament, just because with the double elimination, Indiana State's good. I mean, they could upset them. I'm not saying it can't happen, but
they are the Sycamores, you know, David.
The Sycamore, home of Larry Bird.
That's right, Larry Legend.
But, yeah, so they could lose to Indiana State, and then they could lose to Ohio State. I mean, it could happen. But realistically, I think they lose Friday, win Saturday in the loser's bracket, and then lose to Indiana State and get eliminated. You know, it's just my thought. You know, I'm sure somebody may hold this up if they win two games and, you know, hold the recording against me. But, yeah, just, I mean, and it wouldn't be anything against them. But it's just, you know, you're in a really good regional. So, yeah, but I think it'll definitely be a fun regional for sure.
Well, David, enjoy Nashville, my friend. And just, you know, just look, just go back to all the places that we went to for the SEC tournament. I'm sure they'll recognize you and they'll treat you with just take care of you, man.
For sure. I'm going to go to Hattie B's and get something for your daughter.
There we go. David, appreciate it, brother. Enjoy yourself Nashville, man. And be safe, man.
Will do. Have a good one.
That's David Bear.
If you don't get it, that shop shares the same name as Raymond's daughter.
That's correct. I also have a story about Indiana State. I will share it when we come back from the break. I have a personal connection to Indiana State.
It's going to be like that Independence Bowl story and who is the guys you hung out with from Troy or something like that. Yeah. I see where this is going.
It's nothing that good. We'll keep it going here after this break on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Before the break, or in our last segment, rather, we were talking with our good friend David Berry from Lake Charles American Press about the Cowpokes, McNeese State, heading to the NCAA regionals. They're going to be taking on they're going to the Nashville regional hosted by number one overall seed Vanderbilt. By the way, weird that two teams that beat LSU in midweek games won their conference tournaments and are playing in regionals, Southern and McNeese, just to point that out. It's odd. But McNeese State will play Indiana State in the 2-3 matchup there in the Nashville regional on Friday. I have a connection to Indiana State University, Cody Schutz. And Larry Legend. Are you ready for it? I went to high school in Central Illinois, about 40 minutes away from lovely Terre Haute, Indiana, which is home of Indiana State University.
Right. Heard of Terre Haute.
Your boys, junior prom. My junior year, prom.
In black and white.
Horse and buggy was held
down the old dirt road.
Are you ready to be just filled with so much classiness?
That's fill me with your classiness, Raymond.
My junior year, our prom was held in Terre Haute, in another state, but Terre Haute's right there on the border. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
At none other than Larry Bird's Connection.
Is that, it's like a ballroom or something?
It's like a restaurant,
yeah.
Ballroom area. Got a big old neon sign of Larry Bird out on the out on the outside.
So not as classy as Manning's.
No.
Manning's is doing it right. Manning seems like they got it figured out. Archie did not build a statue of himself, no.
Larry Bird's Connection, junior prom. Senior prom was held in the back of a Ramada. I have good stories. Sometimes they're depressing. We're going to throw up a Twitter poll question for you about LSU baseball regional. Are you worried at all about Stony Brook playing LSU in the Baton Rouge regional? We'll throw that up on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. You go vote on it, and we'll update with the results throughout the rest of today's show and provide final results tomorrow's show. Coming up to lead off the third hour, our good friend from the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo, will join us right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Raging Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
But it's definitely a boost when you, when you look up in the stadium and you see your mom, see your dad, night in and night out, it's just different. And I encourage everybody to be in the opportunity to play at home to do it. It's very fulfilling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also being simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on ILUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. We led off today's show, obviously, talking about LSU baseball. We already knew yesterday, based on the news coming out on Sunday, that there would be a Baton Rouge regional. We finally figured out yesterday who would be playing with LSU in said regional. We know now they'll be leading off against Stony Brook in Game 2 on Friday night, the 1-4 matchup. We're going to talk more about LSU baseball, how they fared at the SEC tournament, and looking ahead to this weekend's regional with our next guest. He's part of the Louisiana Radio Network and is co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. It's the one and only Jeff Palermo. Jeff, how are you this morning?
Oh, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing well. Excited about having some more baseball there at Alex Box Stadium this weekend. There wasn't that long ago that appeared, maybe not in, well, yeah, it appeared that it would not happen. There was a point not that long ago, a few weeks ago, that it appeared that it wouldn't be after what occurred versus Ole Miss, Arkansas, and then the Louisiana Tech midweek game. But these Tigers turned it around, Jeff, ended the regular season strong, and then had a good showing there at the SEC tournament to not only get themselves into an NCAA regional, but get the number 13 national seed. How surprised were you of how they did in the SEC tournament and the fact that they got the 13 overall national seed?
Well, it can't be too surprising that they did go on a run at Hoover. I mean, that's what they do. For whatever reason, this LSU baseball team looks like one of the best teams in the country every time they play in Hoover. It's remarkable. And credit goes to Paul Mainieri for setting the right tone. And the players, it just seems like when one good thing happens to them in that tournament, they kind of feed off of that, and it just keeps building, and the momentum keeps building, and they catch a few breaks, they get a couple of big hits, they get some clutch pitching performances, and before you know it, they've made it to the weekend, even though when the odds looked stacked against them. The number 13 seed, that surprised me. I thought they were more in line. I thought 14 was maybe their high point. But LSU played one of the more difficult schedules in college baseball. When you take a look at some of the teams that they played on the road this year, I know LSU's schedule on the road is not very good, but they had to go to Arkansas, they had to go to Georgia, they had to go to Mississippi State. Those are three teams right there that are national seeds. I haven't looked at everybody else's schedules, but I would imagine they're one of the few teams, if not the only one, that's had to play three national seeds on the road this year. And LSU won one of those series, and they didn't get swept in any of them. So, and they were Arkansas. The first two games against Arkansas weren't very competitive, but they beat Mississippi State, and they were very competitive in that series against Georgia. So, while this team they finished what, fifth or whatever it might have been, fifth in the SEC standings, not first like some were hoping. It still was good, just considering all the injuries and especially some of the injuries that they faced in their pitching staff. I don't want to say it was a successful season, but it was still a good season. And to make it a successful season now, they need to go on a long run here in the NCAA tournament. And I think it's doable. The fact that they're matched up with Georgia, the other regional, I just mentioned that they played Georgia very competitively in that series in Athens back in March. So, I think if they can get through this regional, it wouldn't shock me if they still ended up in Omaha. It also wouldn't shock me if they ended up losing here in this regional. This team has shown that they can beat anybody. They can also lose to anyone.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, the tournament itself was pretty sensational. You had the 17-inning game versus Mississippi State that ended after 3 o'clock in the morning, and then they had to turn around. They lost that game. It's the longest game in LSU baseball history, whether it was time or innings, the longest game in SEC tournament history. On what, 4 hours of sleep, they turn around. They have to play Auburn. They win that game in dramatic fashion with the pass ball and then the throwing error. And then they turn around and absolutely curb stomp Mississippi State again. How surprised were you, but just how impressed were you, rather, with the fact that they were able to bounce back after that 17-inning loss and win two games, one in dramatic fashion and another one where they just took the Bulldogs behind the tool shed?
Well, I thought for sure they would lose to Mississippi State on Friday. I mean, I don't think it was as shocking that they beat Auburn. I mean, it was quite a feat to turn around and play until 3 in the morning and then have a game the next day at 12:45 in the afternoon. And for them to figure out a way to win that game, I mean, that was impressive. To me, it was absolutely shocking what they were able to do to Mississippi State. I mean, they were facing a pitcher last year who was drafted in the first round of the Major League Baseball draft in TJ Ginn, a guy that they hit around pretty good when they faced him in Starkville earlier this season, and they hit him around really good again on Friday night. And to run rule, that was impressive. And you look at the three pitchers that LSU was throwing in that game, Clay Moffitt, Aaron George, and Chase Costello. I mean, three guys they haven't really counted on at all in SEC games, and here they're facing one of the best offenses in the country, and they hold them to two runs. I mean, that one was very, very surprising. And then eventually they just ran out of steam against Vanderbilt. It was bound to happen that they would face a really good team, and they would get beaten pretty badly. I guess you give them credit for avoiding the run rule, but still, this season might not end up in Omaha, but this season will be remembered for what they did in Hoover to play the 17-inning game, come back and beat Auburn, and then crush Mississippi State the next day. That's what this season will be remembered, regardless of what happens from here on out, especially if they don't end up going to the College World Series.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo, the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, the bullpen, in particular the middle relievers, were very good, even great, during the SEC tournament. They were counted on and needed to eat up innings, and they did just that, and they pitched extremely well. How impressed were you with the Tigers' bullpen there in Hoover?
Again, very impressive, and it just seems like every time that they go to the SEC tournament, they just get these pitching performances that you would not anticipate. It happens every single year. Todd Peterson looks like he's really pitching well. Matthew Beck did yeoman's work in the 17-inning game against Mississippi State. They're supposed to get Trent Vitmeyer back this week, which will help to help fortify that bullpen a little bit. But, even Chase Costello, I mean, he had an ERA above 10 going into his outing against Mississippi State on Friday, and he pitched well. Now, can this carry over into the NCAA regionals? We'll see. I think one of the reasons why this team excels so well in the SEC tournament is that I don't think there is a college baseball team that has more pressure to perform well than LSU. I mean, look at the media scrutiny. Just look at when they hold media day and the amount of reporters and people the amount of media that are there for media day. There's nothing like it in college baseball. And then, you know, these kids, I think they get, that pressure grinds on them throughout the season. And then when they get to the SEC tournament and school is done, and they just go out there and play baseball, and they excel well. Well, now the pressure's back on them. They're going to be back at home. They're going to be expected to win. I don't think they're facing – I mean, I think all these teams in the regional provide LSU different challenges. So now let's see if they can perform well like they did against Hoover. You know, and there's also the reason why certain guys are in the bullpen and not starters is because they're not consistent enough, and that's why they're in the bullpen, because they're not as consistent as they should be. While the bullpen has been good, I think it still all depends on what they can get out of the starters. And for LSU's sake, they go into the NCAA tournament knowing that they got three starters to count on: Cole Henry, Eric Walker, and the third name is
Landon Morseau.
Landon Morseau. I mean, those are three guys that they can certainly count on now. Something that they couldn't say just 2 or 3 weeks ago. So that gives them, a bit of confidence heading into this regional.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo, the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, how do you think the rotation is going to set up for the regional? Who do you expect to get the nod Friday versus Stony Brook?
That's a good question. That's tough. You know, I think they go one of two ways. I think it's either Landon Marceau or Cole Henry. I think if they go with Cole Henry, they're hoping that they can at least get 4 or 5 innings out of him. Remember, he's only made one appearance now since the elbow injury. If you go with Landon Marceau, you know that Marceau can probably give you 7 or 8 innings and can save your bullpen a little bit. That's the concern about going with Cole Henry on Friday, is that, again, I think 5 innings is probably the max that you can go with him. So that means you might be depending on your bullpen, and you might burn out your bullpen before the weekend really ever begins. I don't think they'll go with Eric Walker. I just think Marceau, just have him go out there and see if he can give you 7 strong innings. And I guess the only reason why they wouldn't go with Marceau or Henry is because Pulmonary doesn't want a freshman to pitch the opening game of a regional, but I don't know. I mean, you sign these guys to play at LSU to pitch in big games, so you might as well put them out there in a big game against Stony Brook. And then you save Eric Walker on Saturday, which is a very big game in itself. So I think it's Marceau or Henry, and it just depends on how they feel. Do they want to throw a guy on Friday in Marceau that they know can get them deep in the game, or are they fine with going with Cole Henry and give me a 5 innings and then go from there and piece it to maybe you have a big enough lead by that point that you can use some relievers that you – not your premier relievers, some of your secondary guys, and see if you can get through the game. So it's obviously I'm sure it's something – soon as LSU lost to Vanderbilt on Saturday, it's something that Coach Pulmonary and Alan Dunn started thinking about quite a bit.
Talking with Jeff Palermo of Louisiana Radio Network here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, it automatically, as soon as the pairings came out and it said Stony Brook was going to be in the Baton Rouge Regional, even Stony Brook Baseball Twitter account had a little fun of it, sending that little gif saying, hello, you know, at LSU Baseball. I know it's going to be a big narrative this week leading into the game. I get that because of what Stony Brook did to LSU in the Supers that year back in 2012. But, I make this point. The team that is on Stony Brook's squad this year and on the LSU team, those kids weren't even in high school when that occurred. This is not that same Stony Brook team. It's a different circumstances. It's a regional from a 1-4. It's not the Supers. Do you think the Stony Brook angle is going to get overplayed this week?
Oh, I think it will. There's a reason why the game is on ESPNU on Friday night, because, one, I think you have the New York TV market involved in this game, and then, two, anybody in college baseball that follows it remembers what happens in 2012. People remember that Stony Brook 2012 team that shocked everyone and beat LSU in the Super Regionals and went on to play in the College World Series. But this team does not at least look like the squad that we saw here in 2012, which had 7 guys drafted in the first few rounds of the Major League Baseball draft. I mean, when you look at their roster, they got 4 guys that are hitting over 300. Michael Wilson's put up some nice numbers, a .345 hitter, 10 home runs. But once you get past those 4 hitters, the averages drop off quite a bit. So, and then when you look at their pitching staff, They got one guy that kind of, as far as your starters go, that really jumps out at you, and that's Brett Clark. He's got a decent ERA of 3.76. He's got an 8-0 record, probably would be the guy that would face LSU. But you're looking at a guy that's got only 49 strikeouts and 67 innings. So he's not an overpowering guy. So this, you look at it, this looks like your typical number four seed, a school from the north that plays in a small conference that gets a chance here to play some of the big boys and see how they stack up. But it's while this team does have a couple of players that you got to watch out for, again, not the overpowering team that you saw in 2012. I mean, their closer are pretty good too. Sam Turcotte, 7 saves, but also has an ERA right around 4. So, again, I think this should be a game that LSU should win and move on and face either Arizona State or Southern Miss.
I'm talking with Jeff Palermo here at the Louisiana Radio Network on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, need to get you out of here with one last question. I revealed earlier something that I felt that I should brag about, and I need to get your insight as someone of your stature. I told Cody where I held my junior year in high school, where our prom was held at, and it was held in lovely Terre Haute, Indiana, at Larry Bird's Boston Connection, which has now been torn down, I do believe. Is that something I should brag about, or I should just not speak about ever again?
No, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
See, I got the love from Jeff, Cody.
don't feed into it, Jeff. What are you doing?
Yeah, see, I'm a Midwest born kid too, so maybe we appreciate that a little bit more than down here in the South, who basketball is not as big, right? You
know? That's right. I'm not gonna lie. As a junior, I thought it was pretty cool that we traveled the 40 minutes west to go to Terre Haute, Indiana, to go to Larry Bird's Boston Connection for our prom. It was pretty cool back then. I'm just saying.
Not a Cubs fan, Raymond, so your opinion doesn't matter.
Oh, my God. My first ball game, true story, first Major League Baseball game I ever went to, Jeff, Wrigley Field, right behind the third base dugout, 18 innings, Expos, Cubs, Maddox was the starter, Dawson, Grace, Sandberg. So, yeah, that was my first. I've been spoiled ever since, Jeff. I went to that game, 18 innings, I was 12. There was no coming back from that. I could go to any other game, and it's just like, I was like, well, how was the ball game? I was like, oh, yeah, it was nice. It was nice. Well, I was like, well, I have high expectations. I can't help myself.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to start it off, for sure.
Jeff, appreciate you making some time for us, playing along with us, man. Enjoy the rest of your week, brother, and enjoy the regional, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks. Appreciate it, Ray.
Jeff Palermo, Louisiana Radio Network, co-host of Tiger Ag Radio.
And Cubs fan.
And diehard Cubs fan. Joining us. He gave me a little dap. I appreciate that. He took pity on me. But you did notice he was like, oh yeah, Larry. See, he probably knew.
It sounded like he knew what you were talking about. So
it became like,
he's from Illinois. So y'all grew up in the same state at least.
Yes. So, yes, he knew of the Larry Bird's Boston connection. I looked it up online. It's no longer there.
So you're telling me they paved Paradise and put up a parking lot? Is that what you're telling me?
How dare you? Those green tablecloths. Majestic. Majestic.
Please tell me they were Celtic green, too.
Like, oh, they not were. Just they
like,
were.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, the memorabilia was everywhere. There wasn't an inch of the wall that wasn't covered for our prom. We didn't even have space to put up our own stuff, if I remember correctly.
Shenanigans.
We got to hit a break. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. call 811 2 days before you dig, tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. I am your host, Raymond Parks III. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos. Woo! Tremendous Tuesday. Just had a terrific conversation with Jeff Palermo from Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. Coming up, Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast is going to join us. Give us his thoughts with the first week of OTAs in the books. What are some of his takeaways from what's going on with the Hoodats? Please go vote on the 103.7 The Game Twitter poll question. It is simply, are you worried about LSU baseball facing Stony Brook in the Baton Rouge Regional? So far, Cody Schutz, 75% say no. I would agree with that. This isn't 2012.
I like the confidence so far. I would select no as well.
But I am intrigued. I think they take care of business against Stony Brook. But like Jeff mentioned, you know, are you going to get a long enough outing out of Henry to not have to use up a bunch of your bullpen? Because, I don't know, those boppers in the Arizona State lineup, those intrigue me. That matchup intrigues me, especially there inside Alex Box Stadium during a hot late May. So we'll see. When we come back, we'll be talking to our good friend Andrew Juge with the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. That's right. Big ups to my 4.5-year-old daughter. Got her working.
Coming after my job.
She's coming for you, Schutz. She's coming for you. And when she walks into the studio, she believes she owns the place already. So
I'm not telling her any different.
Neither does her daddy. That's a subject for another day. It's time now for us to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Welcome on our next guest. He's our good friend from the Saints Happy Hour podcast, Andrew Juge. Andrew, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good, man. I've been put to shame. I'm wondering if your daughter should apply for my role here in this segment. She nailed that. That was awesome.
Man, and she's got all the confidence. She just rolled up here. She just rolls up, sits in the chair, and is like, "What's up?" It's like, I wish I had that kind of confidence at the age of four that my daughter has.
I love it.
So, look, man, OTAs, we talked about it last week. It's kind of a funny thing. It's not really training camp, but it's more of getting to know one another and kind of building a rapport is the biggest thing. And I think that's important for this year's Saints team because there are a couple of new pieces, in particularly the offensive skill position guys, Andrew. And Drew Brees and Sean Payton both talked about it late last week about kind of getting to know Latavius Murray and Jarrett Cook. Your impressions on what you saw and heard from the first week of OTAs, in particularly when it concerned Cook and Murray and them being on the same page with Drew Brees?
Well, Brees had a lot of positive things to say about both players. You know, I think the thing that always stands out with Latavius Murray, when you're talking about a 6'3", you know, 220-plus pound back, I mean, he's just got huge size. And you really, you know, Adrian Peterson maybe is the one exception in New Orleans where you saw a guy that was a little bit taller, but you really don't see many running backs that have that kind of height and that kind of size. So Murray is a physical specimen, and I think that's always going to be the first thing that stands out. And, you know, Brees was very complimentary of Jarrett Cook, how he looked coming in and out of his routes, his intelligence, his understanding of the game. He's been around a while. You know, he's 32 now, so he's been in the league for a minute. And, you know, I think it shows just in his IQ and in his ability to I think that's what this offense needs right now. I mean, if you look at last year and maybe some of the struggles on third down, the struggles over the middle, maybe almost asking Michael Thomas to do too much because they didn't really have anyone else that could do it. I still think, you know, obviously with his age, Jared Cook, I mean, the big thing is going to be his health, and he's been inconsistent in his career. It's a little weird that, you know, it took until last year for him to really fulfill his potential. I feel like his whole career has been underachievement. I mean, a supremely talented guy that never really lived up to his full potential until last year with the Raiders. And so now it's kind of like, well, what do you expect to see from this guy? But I really think he's going to have a monster year in this offense if he can stay healthy.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, I want to get your thoughts, though, on the center position. We've talked about it before. You know, they take the young man out of Texas A&M, McCoy, in the second round. I feel that he could be a plug-and-play guy from jump, but they did sign Eason from the Minnesota Vikings, a versatile guy that can play both guard and center. He was injured most of last year, so he's coming off the injury. That's going to be an open competition. I truly believe that Sean Payton's going to let whoever the best guy wins, and then the other guy can be the backup. What are your thoughts on that, and did anything in the first week of OTAs change your mind concerning that?
Well, no, I would say just interestingly, Cameron Tom was the guy taking snaps at center. And, you know, Easton, now they were missing Andres Pete, who was missing some time. And so he, at left guard, they had Nick Easton. So Easton was playing more left guard. But Cameron Tom was starting at center. And, you know, it's interesting at center. I mean, I fully expect that at the end of the day, week one, that Eric McCoy will be that guy. You know, I think they traded up to get him. I think he's a guy they really like. And I don't think they would have gone to that length unless they really had a vision for this guy being the heir apparent to Max Unger long term. So whether it's week one or week four or maybe even next year, eventually I think McCoy's that guy. But I do think it will happen as soon as week one. So I'm expecting him to be the starter. Now, it's not going to be handed to him. He's going to have to prove that he's fully capable and ready to assume that role. It doesn't surprise me that he's not getting reps at the one, you know, first day of OTAs, because obviously there's other guys that have been in the system longer than know the team. So he's going to have to demonstrate that he can do it and prove himself. But there's a lot of guys that are viable candidates for that role. I mean, you mentioned Easton. He's the high-priced free agent that they signed, and he's going to be battling for that job. And then you've got Cameron Tom right now, who at least as of OTAs is the guy snapping the ball to Breeze. Will Clapp was a center for LSU, and he's a guy that I think maybe they prefer him at guard, but certainly he's got some ability to play center as well. So you know, there's a lot of guys on this roster, and I think right now what the Saints are trying to do is I think they realize the enormity of losing Unger, and I think it's one of those things where they don't really necessarily feel like there's going to be a guy that they can get that's necessarily just going to come in and fill in his shoes. And so I think right now the Saints feel like there's power in numbers. And I think the Saints have three, four, five guys on this roster that are pretty capable of being the starting center for a team in the NFL. And they're going to let all these guys battle it out. I think it's going to be great competition, something to watch. But ultimately, again, I think McCoy's the guy.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, you know, you talked about Cook. I believe that the Saints do not need him to be a Pro Bowler like he was last year. I mean, because if you look at his stats, last year he recorded career highs like you talked about. He's had an up-and-down career. Light bulb just never kind of really went off for him. But last year, 68 catches, 896 yards, and six receiving touchdowns. That was more receptions, yards, and receiving touchdowns than the entire tight end core for the Saints last year combined. Okay? So, you know, and they haven't had a tight end core combined for more than 1,000 yards and double-digit touchdowns since 2015. So I don't think they need Cook to put up Jimmy Graham-like numbers. They just need him to be better than what they've had in the last four seasons.
Yeah, that's a crazy stat you just gave about his receiving totals versus the Saints tight ends as a whole last year. But absolutely, I agree with you. I think ultimately the passing game is still going through Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. I think when you look at the Saints last year and what they did offensively, I wouldn't say that it was necessarily predictable, but in terms of volume, I think it was too much. I mean, it was going way too much through Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. And I think the big reason for that, on top of injuries, I mean, obviously they were expecting more out of Cam Meredith, and things didn't really pan out for him. They were expecting more out of Ben Watson, and he had some injuries, and he just wasn't quite the player that he used to be. So, you know, if they had to bring in guys, you know, I think they were expecting maybe a little bit more out of Tre'Quan Smith his rookie year. He made some plays, but really the second half of the year, I thought he declined. And so, you know, they had to bring in guys like Keith Kirkwood to make an impact. And, you know, the free agent signings of Dez Bryant and Brandon Marshall, I mean, they tried. They tried to get some guys to complement Thomas and Kamara, and none of them really panned out. So Kirkwood was really the one that came in the middle of the season and was able to at least help the offense a little bit. But ultimately, I think the Saints were always looking for that third and fourth playmaker, and again also got injured, and I think we saw the impact that had on the offense as well. So going into the season, obviously you hope that Ted Ginn can stay healthy, because I still think he's a guy that is important to this offense. And you know, if Cam Meredith can rebound and bounce back, that's another guy that I think could be productive in this offense. But I think as it stands right now, day one, Jared Cook comes into this offense and he's immediately your number three target. So you're right. He doesn't have to make 100 catches this year to be successful. He's not going to be a volume player for this offense necessarily. But when you talk about the attention that Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara on every single player going to command, defensive coordinators are going to have to game plan for those two. They're going to have to make their coverage specific to those guys, and I think it will create enormous opportunities for Jared Cook. So while I don't necessarily see a 12-catch, 98-yard stat line for Jared Cook, I very easily see a 4-catch, 120-yard, 1-touchdown game for him. I think he can make huge plays down the seam considering the coverages and looks that they'll get.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, you know, OTAs, you know, it's not exactly training camp, but it is still important. Are there some players out there? You mentioned Cameron Meredith, who I feel like maybe has a little pressure on him to show the coaching staff that he's back and healthy and can be a guy for them moving forward to keep his job. Are there some other players maybe in addition to Cameron Meredith that you're looking to that maybe need to have a strong performance during OTAs heading into training camp?
Well, I just look at the lack of competition behind Cam Jordan and Davenport, Marcus Davenport at defensive end. And I think this is a tremendous opportunity for Trey Hendrickson. Trey Hendrickson was a great college player that broke records sack-wise. He comes to the NFL, and in year one, he contributes a little bit and had a phenomenon. He was one of the best Saints players in training camp last year and really felt like maybe he was going to be able to have a big year and contribute. And, you know, he got banged up a little bit to begin the year, and he just never really saw the field when the Saints were loaded at defensive end and never really had injuries. You know, they wanted Davenport to play, and as the season continued, you know, I think he started to get his feet wet and started to get more comfortable. Obviously, Alex Okafor did a great job coming back from his injury, and Cam Jordan was Cam Jordan all year. So he never really got an opportunity to play, but now, a year removed, we've seen Okafor leave the team in free agency, and now Hendrickson is, until we see anyone else emerge, the third defensive end on the team. So I think this is a huge opportunity for him, and he's got to take it. We've seen some promising things from him, both in preseason training camp and maybe a little bit his rookie year, but he has not done enough ultimately, I think, to make it clear that he deserves the number three defensive end spot on this team. And so I think this is a huge camp for him. That's absolutely a player I'm watching. Secondly, I mean, I would just say special teams is going to be very, very highly contested this year. With you look at the signings that the Saints have had, you look at the money they've spent. I think it's going to be hard for guys like Justin Hardy, Chris Banjo. I mean, we take those guys for granted. We assume they will be part of the core special teams unit. But when you think about the acquisitions that were made, you know, Saquon Hampton. It's going to be hard for a lot of these guys to make the team, and they're going to have to earn it. So, you know, nothing's going to be given on special teams. And even at returner, you know, I fully expect Marcus Sherrill to be the guy, but he's going to have to prove it also.
We're speaking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Marcus Davenport, he's going to be day-to-day through OTAs. Do you expect that to continue into training camp and he be slowly incorporated into getting more and more reps? You think they're going to be more cautious than anything, Andrew?
Yeah, I think they'll be cautious. But, look, they need Davenport, and this year more than ever. They don't have the luxury of Alex Okafor on the roster to kind of bridge him. And it's time for him to step up. So I certainly hope to see him on the field very, very soon. And it kind of goes hand-in-hand with what I was saying about Hendrickson. I don't really feel like there's a whole lot behind Jordan and Davenport. I mean, certainly I hope that Hendrickson makes that leap, and he's still a prospect that I'm excited about. But I think the Saints are a little thin at defensive end, depending on how some of these young guys emerge. And so, look, the Saints gave up the two first-round picks for Davenport. There was the heavy investment. They let Okafor walk because they believe Davenport is ready to start and ascend and be that player opposite Cam Jordan that they envision him being. And so the only way for him to do it is to be at practice. It's to get on the field. It's to have a good training camp, play well in preseason, and get momentum going into the season. So the Saints need him. They're counting on him. They've invested heavily in him. And the bottom line is he's got to get on the field and he's got to perform, because otherwise that's going to be really costly for the Saints considering what they gave up to get him.
Andrew, tell the people when the next Happy Hour podcast drops and how can they get it, my friend.
Thank you. Yeah, we actually just did a show last night, which is free for anyone to listen to. So you can check us out. It's the Saints Happy Hour podcast. We have our own website. You can also find us on social media, on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. All our shows are posted on there. So, again, it's the Saints Happy Hour podcast. We also record a seven-minute show daily with all of our updates on the Saints for that day. So you'll get access to that as well, and check us out.
Andrew, appreciate you making time for us as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
That sounds good. Thank you.
It's Andrew Juge, Saints Happy Hour podcast. You should check it out. It's good stuff. That's right. I say so, which means it has to be true. I just said that with a question mark, didn't I? I did. We will wrap up this tremendous Tuesday edition of RP3 and Company after this break right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber on 133 and 1133 in HD. I want to thank our guests today, David Berry from the Lake Charles American Press, Jeff Palermo from the Louisiana Radio Network, and Andrew Juge from the Saints Happy Hour podcast. Cody Schutz,
yep.
We gave the people a poll.
Oh, we did.
Our LSU fans came out. I know they get excited. They get pumped up. They love voting in these baseball polls. Give us an update. What was the poll question? Where do we stand?
It's pretty simple. Are you worried about LSU facing Stony Brook in that Baton Rouge regional there? 45 votes in already. A lot of play for this poll question. A very nice 69% says no, they are not worried. 31% still a little hesitant, but 69% saying they're not worried. We even got Stephen Miller at DSports24 saying that a four seed is a far cry. He's a lot of R's.
Yes.
From a two seed with a ton of potential or professional baseball players on their team, Stephen himself is more concerned with Arizona State or Southern Miss.
I'm more worried about Arizona State. If there's a team in this regional that I'd be a little concerned about, it'd be the Sun Devils, because they got those boppers, they got those guys that can tee off, and we know LSU's pitching has given up the dingers.
Far Cry, also the name of a video game.
There we go. Cody, we did not have time to delve into this yesterday during our special Memorial Day edition of RP3 and Company. So, your weekend. This is what I did. I actually enjoyed myself. It was anniversary weekend for me and my wife.
I saw that on the social media.
Yes, on the so we planned it out. We went to a delightful steakhouse for a good dinner one night. We went to the movie, saw John Wick Chapter 3.
I heard it was really good.
Oh, he kills so many people.
I heard it was good.
It's so good. And then yesterday after the show, we also had a little day off after our show.
Yeah.
So we took our daughter out to Lake Martin,
okay,
which we're a big fan of, and we went on a swamp tour, and she just ate that up.
Lake Martin's been on Swamp People before.
Oh, she just ate that up, seeing all the birds and the gators.
Oh, yeah.
And the
Tell
frogs.
Her she can come hang out in my backyard. Not a joke.
So she had a good time. How about you, sir? How about you?
Well,
I know you had some...
What is the saying? What's the saying? Best laid plans, right? Isn't that the thing?
Yes, yes. You were talking about yesterday on the show.
Or something like that.
Right. Yesterday on the show, you were like, I can't wait. I got to go and get in my pool
right.
and get the grill on.
There was no need for me to text H2O to 62623 because I was going to... 686... What was the number here? 62583. There it is.
That's for my Blue Bayou Dixieland tickets.
I didn't need to do that because I was going to go swimming. I was going to be in my pool all day. It was going to be great. It was going to be wonderful.
Not
what ended up happening. Cody spent probably the largest amount of continuous hours he's ever spent inside of a hospital yesterday. I was there. I don't even know how many hours. It's a long, 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 long time. But everything's fine. No worries. Everything's good. The sister-in-law had her first baby yesterday. So I spent a whole lot of time at a hospital. Little Walter August Dorn doing his thing. He's a little wad. That's what I like to call him because his initials and he's tiny. So, but yes, welcome to the world, August. You are one day old, my friend.
And so how long before you start providing him guilt for ruining your Memorial Day barbecue / pool party?
It's not him I'm going to give the guilt to. I'm going to buy this child all the Pokemon stuff because his mom despises it. And you can guarantee that. Take that to the bank. If there's one real thing I ever say, it was that.
That's what you get for having your kid early. Oh, we're terrible. Y'all have a great day. I know y'all going to be sluggish out there getting back to the grind. But hope you enjoy yourself. Coming up next.
Hey, it's... The